This is ILTA Radio, the source for legal technology practices and ideas to help your career delivered to fit your busy schedule. ILTA Radio, get tuned in.
Welcome to today's ILTA podcast entitled Enterprise IT Support at Home. I am your moderator today, Mark Manoukian, IT Director of Kegler, Brown, Hill & Ritter in Columbus, Ohio. I am thrilled to be joined by our speakers, Dave Michel, Chief Information Officer of Becker & Polyakov, and Frank Ziller, CIO of Frontline Managed Services. Welcome, Dave and Frank. So we'll just dive right in. What are the challenges supporting enterprise users working remotely? And we'll start with you, Dave.
Well, thank you. Glad to be here. Of course, you go, once people are remote now, you're talking about troubleshooting home equipment in people's homes. So we were pretty traditional where attorneys had Citrix access and everyone else worked in the office. But obviously that changed with COVID, and you have to learn the little nuances. Like, for example, AT&T has a DNS feature that can mess up file site if you use that. And those are things you only learn by trial and error. And so we've kind of learned as we've gone along with that. And we are supporting people's home internet to a degree, their home modems, as far as showing them where those things exist, where they live, how to reboot. The fact that, you know, the internet speed they're promised from their carrier is not what they're getting, and that if they have a 1 meg upload, for example, that it's not going to work very well for any application, and it's not a problem with the VPN. We've also reached out to people at the beginning when we gave laptops, because we are now predominantly a laptop shop, and helping everybody individually. We do use Frontline, but unlike some other firms, we didn't want to overload the help desk. So we reached out individually to about 250 people to help them set up their home monitors, home dock, laptop, etc. So that was quite a labor of love to do remotely with people who are frankly not that technical a lot of times.
Wow, so you guys did a lot of work.
Yeah, we thought it was the right thing to do. It was the individual touch, and we really wanted it to go well. So, you know, we didn't want to put it on someone else and then have a bad experience where people couldn't get support or it wouldn't work. And then all of a sudden the new laptop and equipment we spent a lot of money on didn't go well for them. Then they have a bad taste in their mouth just to start. And we wanted to avoid that.
Right. And so at the start of the pandemic, I mean, you mentioned that you use Citrix, but did that apply to everybody?
No, it was attorneys only, pretty traditional. They could choose to work or not. A few paralegals and other key staff had Citrix access also, but no one else did. So we did a complete 180 from, you know, 85, 90% of people in the office to everybody out of the office with different technology.
And Frank, tell us about your experience.
Yeah, what we've observed was a couple of things. The first one is many firms did not have a permanent work from home solution in place leading up the pandemic. And in many cases, what happened is firms transitioned to more of a business continuity / DR plan, which generally were never envisioned to be a permanent technology stack in the work from home model. And the problem with that is, you know, you start taking some significant efficiency hits because you're getting away from what was typically a cookie cutter model where you're stamping out the same solution to employees to support. Now you're having to build custom solutions to meet the needs to get them up and running and to build time or complete their work. And so, you know, and in doing so, you know, we saw that firms, you know, took a pretty substantial hit early on. You know, some of the data was pointing to a 20 to 40% productivity hit, wrestling with technology problems. And to address that issue, you know, we've seen firms pull a number of different levers throughout the process, whether it was trying to standardize on more of a cookie cutter model with getting similar technology out to everyone, which then also provided an opportunity to make sure that technology was secure and things along those lines. You know, we saw some pretty significant increase in help desk volume, as you might imagine, as we were trying to help support getting firm members up and running again.
Right. And so let's talk about the scope of working remotely. I mean, we've all worked remotely before. And Frank, you mentioned it's not simply pulling one lever. I mean, Dave went through a different remote access solution change. They replaced one with the other. I mean, do you simply give them the solution, or is there training required? Are there other aspects to this that, you know, we need to know about?
Yeah. So some of the things that we observed is, you know, early on it was, hey, get whatever could working and get people up and running. And then it was, hey, let's standardize on some technology. We've seen a fairly significant increase in utilization of tools that lend themselves to remote working. So the entire Office 365 suite, cloud-based document management tools, remote desktops of some sort that range from simple solutions like Amazon Workspaces all the way to, you know, full-blown VMware VDI being implemented at a greater scale within the firm. And then along with that comes support. And so you've seen some creative ways where firms were supporting users. Obviously, we saw a large uptick in help desk volume, but also we saw many firms very effectively leverage champions within functional areas. So you tend to have, you know, non-IT members that are somewhat tech savvy. And we saw a fair number of instances where those folks were helping their peers out to work through some of these non-standard type issues.
Right. So with that last question, I really segued into how has your organization overcome these challenges? Dave, tell us what tools have you used to help support the enterprise users at home or working remotely?
Well, I think the tools is the key, because there's a lot of technology that as IT professionals, we can use, and we understand that, you know, your average non-IT person is not going to fully grasp right away. So for example, when we went to the remote system, we did log me in for non-attorneys because they weren't used to working from home, and they were not going to have a real easy time for the most part grasping the shared desktop environment and the fact that there's a different document they left open, wasn't open the next day. So we did log me in for staff. Attorneys stayed on Citrix before we switched to laptops. And when we switched to laptops, we started off with attorneys only, and then paralegals, and then eventually anyone who can do their job from home. In other words, not office services and receptionists, but just about everybody else now has a laptop. But what we did, for example, is we did the Microsoft Always On VPN. We were using SonicWall for a smaller group before, and people had to manually connect, or if they automatically connected, their password changed, then they got prompted and couldn't log in, and it was just confusing. So we did Always On VPN because it connects automatically, it's secure, and people can use the computer, and we can tell them, look, as long as you have internet access, the VPN should work. So it's very easy. Go to a website you don't normally go to. Can you get there? Yes. Then everything should be good. It's not the VPN's issue if you can't. So it made troubleshooting easier. We do use Proxy, which we used Proxy Pro, which we've used to connect to the computers. And obviously we can do that for, you know, a laptop wherever it is also. But we found we had to make an investment in our case, we did go to Assist, because suddenly we're now connecting to people's home Macs and home PCs that we don't manage to help them. So that was, you know, another tool that we added to the mix. And like everyone else, Zoom became much more popular as far as our usage. And we actually use that to remote and look at people's phones and iPads and help them troubleshoot and assist them that way.
Right. And you implemented an LMS.
Yeah. So that was one of the other key things we did. We did Tutor Pro, and we had been talking about it, and we just pulled the plug because, you know, it's going to be an issue where we'll be hybrid for a while. And the full, you know, several days in a training room with a trainer in person is kind of a dying or dead concept. So it's a cloud-based DMS, and very happy with being able to have people take their classes from wherever they are, home, office, our computer, their computer, doesn't matter.
Frank already gave us this same question when he mentioned that a lot of firms went to cloud-based and hosted resources such as Microsoft Office 365, Teams, et cetera, et cetera. How about support on mobile devices and or other tools such as speed test? Do either of you use any of those tools?
Yep. So we do, because, and we actually asked help desk to make that one of the first steps in troubleshooting when people say, hey, the VPN doesn't work or the system is slow, to have them run a speed test, because going back to people, you know, assume they have a connection that is 250 down and 20 up, but they, you know, no one knows really what that means. So it's a visual way to show people that you have to have a number higher than X and you're at, you know, Y, then that's your issue. It isn't the system. So that was a real easy way to do it. And like I said, we use Zoom, just expanded it to connect to the mobile devices, because more and more people are doing more and more on those mobile devices rather than their work computer.
And Zoom will let you see the mobile device screen?
Yeah, if you join from the, we would have someone join from their computer and then join from their phone, both, and then you can share the screen, and it works well for us. Our trainers use it quite often.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that. I know Proxy Pro does that. And even though we have Proxy Pro, we're still using an older version that doesn't yet support that. How have support practices changed when moving from an enterprise office to home? We'll let you go first, Frank.
Yeah, so I think the most significant one is that the volume, the burden of supporting end users and kind of this new technology stack is a pretty significant cost to it in IT members' time or in the number of staff needed, things of that nature. And within the firms that we support, you know, as they're adapting to new technology, there is a significant amount of work that we had to do as far as learning and understanding that technology so it could be supported. So things like creating new knowledge base articles to address the technology so we can respond quickly to a support need and things along those lines, and being adaptable and the ability to react quickly when a firm does bring technology in. You know, that's really been what our experience has been is trying to find ways to support the variability in within the firm's environments.
Dave, same question to you.
All right, with us, you know, a lot of it is the, you know, when people are in the office, IT just fix it, come running. And everyone knows who works at a law firm, there's exceptions to every rule of always call the help desk or don't call people directly, because people, especially people with equity, tend to want to get things done as quickly as possible. And so there was an adjustment to, sorry, I can't run to your house in the middle of a pandemic and touch your equipment. So it took people a little while to get used to that. You know, my internal team is actually, I think, much more productive that they are working remotely because of that, because you don't have people popping in saying, hey, can you reboot my phone, or I can't do this, come to my desk. So my people, it's been a great thing for them. And it, like I said earlier, teaching people, you know, and having them find out where their modem is at home, how to reboot it, how to set up home equipment. One of our trainers created a video, virtual classes, because, you know, we basically dropped stuff in someone's trunk in a socially distant kind of way, and they had to go home and set up a dock and two monitors, you know, on their own. So a lot of patience, a lot of hand holding, but ultimately it worked very well and took about a year and had to update everything. So, you know, help desk knows who's using a laptop, who's not, and some basic troubleshooting that may or may not even be standard to us. But those are the kinds of things we had to do.
Right. So there's at least a chunk there of remote support where it's really about self-service. And I'm also seeing, you know, in some of your answers that a theme that goes to training. So let's talk about what new knowledge or certifications have helped you cope with the changing environment or other resources.
Well, for me and my staff, it was alcohol. You know, those first couple of months of COVID were crazy for everybody. You know, projects that would have taken a year or multiple months, you know, like everybody else, we were had a 1 week period where we thought, I think we're going to end up closing. And then the firm announces on Thursday that Monday, everyone in the firm's working remotely, when, you know, 75% of your people weren't working remotely before. That took a lot. Working with a vendor can help too. We worked with a vendor, Richard Hicks, to set up our always on VPN. We hired Olenek, for example, to set up a cloud gateway to help us with that for SCCM that doesn't require a VPN, so that we can patch and update computers, you know, without the VPN having to be accessible, and without having to come back into the data center. So those sorts of things, just to make the computing world easier and more efficient for everybody are things we did.
And Frank, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the biggest challenge is we're, and I think, you know, David kind of mentioned this, you're in early on, it was, you had to do what you had to do to keep the lights on and keep people productive and working. And that wasn't any one thing. That was a lot of creativity that was employed to solve problems quickly. You know, right. Since that time, as things have started to normalize, you know, one of the areas where we've seen a significant acquisition of new knowledge within the firms we support was on the security side of things with, you know, what tools do you leverage to manage the devices? As David had pointed out, you know, it has very much become more of a self-service world than what it would have been 18 months ago. So a lot of the user support, you can transition over to a self-help methodology with the right tools and processes in place. But there was a number of tools around data security and management of devices as firms invested and brought in the deployment to serve the firm.
Well, that makes a nice segue to the last question, which is what challenges remain? And I know that both of you guys feel like data security is one of those challenges. So Dave, tell me how you feel about that.
Well, it absolutely is because, you know, pre-COVID, when you had, you know, some attorneys working with Citrix, you still had basically 100% of your data behind the firewall and protected. Now we're 90% laptops, and we reopened yesterday, and that means 2.5 days a week for most people. So even when everyone is, I'll put quotes around, back in the office, it still means probably 60% of my data is and devices are outside the network. So endpoint protection, zero trust, SASE, secure web gateway, all these other things that we didn't have in place before now become paramount.
So, and let's talk about what challenges remain on hardware. And Dave, you can go first.
All right. Well, for us, it's just standardizing on things. So, you know, being, you know, it's having the VPN, having a standard configuration and setup that we can hand to people and say, here, go, it works. Like a lot of firms were, you know, a high touch. So we do get people's passwords, fully set up their computer, cache their mailbox, and then force them to change the password. And that's much easier than, for example, someone gets a new Mac or MacBook, and now we have to connect to them and install the security certificates on it to connect to Citrix, which is not as, you know, easy as it is and automated. So it's just a little bit easier for us and less touching of personal devices, which is what I like.
And Frank, what's your opinion on the
Couple thoughts on this one. One interesting trend that we've kind of observed over the last couple months is that a lot of firms, particularly ones that have more mature lifecycle management processes, there's a need for an inventory of all the assets within your organization. And there was such a shotgun approach to getting equipment out. There have been some gaps in having an inventory of all the assets out there, which obviously is very important when you want to go patch and ensure that your environment's secure. That's kind of your starting point, so you can check off that each asset's been secured. So that's a unique challenge that we see people wrestling with. You know, in many cases, they will take an ITSM solution like a ServiceNow and you know, invest in kind of building out and updating the inventory. The other thing that I thought was interesting is that we typically see firms functioning in one of three models today. The first model is more of a, you know, the same business continuity approach that they were operating under since the beginning of the pandemic and are transitioning out to something a little bit more permanent. The other mode that we see people in employing is the cloud, where you're in more of the native cloud applications where security is purpose-built into that solution. And then the third one is where you see firms that are deploying small office or home office security devices like a home firewall, where only corporate assets can be plugged into that device. And the advantage of that solution is that they have the ability to take the equipment as it existed in the office, put it in someone's remote work location, and then manage and support those devices just like we're in the office. So that's what we've kind of seen from a security standpoint.
Excellent. Do either of you support remote printing?
We do. We discourage it. We don't want it, but we do allow people to hook home printers and scanners to their laptops, and we've authorized help desk to help install drivers if needed. We're hoping to go to a better model with some remote management, but we're not there yet.
Yeah, and this has certainly been a high touch area and continues to be within our firm client base. You know, I will tell you that I went over and asked one of our service desk leaders this question, and it was interesting. One of the responses I got was, yeah, one of the biggest pointers is if people are going to be working from home, and I thought this was interesting, is make sure they get inkjet, or they do not buy inkjet devices and buy laser printers, because they tend to work more reliably and this, that, and the other. So I thought that was an interesting observation when looking at functional requirements for remote printing. It doesn't really address some of the security concerns that might be out there.
The last piece about, you know, what challenges remain goes to supporting home networks. And, you know, we covered that earlier. But except for one thing, and Frank, I'll put this question to you. Does time of day make a difference?
Yeah, this was an interesting challenge for us to work through. And, you know, early on, we worked a lot of issues that were kind of ghost issues, where what I would describe as they were inconsistent and they were transient, which makes it tough to then pinpoint and triage. And what we tend to find, and this is tapered off a little bit, say over the last 3 to 4 months, but people were relying on their home internet connection to perform work, which is a residential solution, not a commercial solution. So you would run into issues where typically in the morning hours, you would see people have functional issues that were nothing more than high congestion and saturation of their local internet carriers. And we've had to find an interesting set of processes to go through to diagnose that issue. There's a number of tools you can use, from trace routes to the speed test piece, to figure out what might be going on. But the quality of internet connections has certainly provided some interesting challenges in a work from home scenario.
Right. And it can vary throughout the time of day. Well, that's all the questions that I have. And with that, I just want to say thank you very much for the audience for tuning in to today's podcast. And I want to extend my thanks to Frank and David. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
You've been listening to ILTA Radio. Subscribe to ILTA's podcasts through iTunes or Podbean and get alerted about new recordings. ILTA Radio. Get tuned in.